Ramsey TV.
In spite of 6 hours of agony and torture on the cross, in the interest of eradicating sin from the world, salvation, according to the world's most popular religion, is still theoretical. It's still dependent upon the sinner to contribute the vital half of the salvation equation. I'm going to show you how that works. This is pathetic. I'm going to show you very descriptively where the mistake happens and how Satan is responsible for it. But of course, God is ultimately responsible for it. But today I'm going to look at the secondary cause. This is Martin Zender, and my nose always itches as soon as I start this show. Okay, let's see. I think I got it. All right, welcome to another edition of MZTV. Listen to this. Have you ever heard this? This is shocking. Nobody ever looks at it this way, what I'm about to tell you, except me. According to the world's most popular religion, Jesus on the cross, the 6 hours on the cross, Jesus plus nothing else, plus nothing. Jesus plus nothing equals nothing. How can I say that? Because Jesus Christ's work alone doesn't save. If it did, then why aren't you born saved? I'm going to get to the classic Christian, quote, salvation message, which starts you condemned, starts you as a sinner going to hell. Here's the way it actually works with them. Jesus plus nothing equals nothing, but Jesus plus sinner's contribution equals everything. Jesus plus nothing equals nothing, because after Jesus Christ's work on the cross, everybody is still born a sinner bound for hell. As you've heard me say many times, that's your default setting. But Jesus plus sinner's contribution, which every church defines what that is, equals everything. So if that's the case, in their scenario, what's the most important part of that equation? Jesus? No. It's the sinner's contribution that makes the thing happen. Let's talk about the sinner's prayer. I might title this show, The Sinner's Prayer. The sinner's prayer is actually a Wikipedia entry. Did you know that? Yeah, I looked up the sinner's prayer, and it's so official, it's so known, it's on Wikipedia. This is what Wikipedia says about it. The sinner's prayer is an evangelical term referring to any prayer of repentance prayed by individuals who feel convicted of the presence of sin in their lives and desire to form or renew a personal relationship with God through Jesus Christ. And just throw him in there, man. It is a popular phenomenon in Protestant circles and has been called, quote, a hallmark of evangelical conversionism. I didn't even know conversionism was a word. I guess it is. Here we go. It is intended to be an act of initial conversion to Christianity and the only way to receive salvation. Did you hear that? Wikipedia sees right through this. I mean, I guess Christians would agree with this definition, but do they ever think about this? The sinner's prayer, quote, is intended to be an act of initial conversion to Christianity and the only way to receive salvation. You would think that Jesus Christ dying on the cross for sin would be the only way to receive salvation. It's not. Remember, Jesus plus nothing equals nothing. Jesus plus the sinner's prayer. Ho, ho, ho. That seals the deal. That finishes it. That does everything. Jesus, when he said on the cross, it is finished. He died too soon. See, he meant to stay alive for another 10 seconds so he could say, it is finished, except for the sinner's prayer. So it's very tragic that he didn't get that last part out, because he surely meant to. Back to Wikipedia. The sinner's prayer takes various forms, all of which have the same general thrust. Since it is considered a matter of one's personal will, it can be prayed silently, aloud, read from a suggested model, or repeated after someone modeling the prayer role. Yeah, repeat after me. I'm a wretched sinner bound for hell.
I'm a wretched sinner bound for hell.
Unless I say these prayers.
Unless I say these prayers.
I will go to hell.
I will go to hell.
Where it is extremely hot
It's extremely, where
it is extremely hot.
Where it is extremely hot.
And I will not be given any suntan lotion.
And I will not be given any suntan lotion.
The Sinner's Prayer, as popularly known today, has roots in Protestant Christianity. Some affirm that it evolved in some form or another in the early days of the Protestant Reformation movement. Don't tell me Luther started this. Come on. As a reaction against the Roman Catholic dogma of justification by means of meritorious works. So, the Protestant Church, headed by Luther, apparently they rebelled against the Catholic dogma of justification, not by faith, no, justification by means of meritorious works, like that's the gold standard. And so, no, we're not going to have any more salvation by meritorious works. Instead, we're going to have the Sinner's Prayer. As if that's not a meritorious work. They traded one meritorious work for another, and none of them are meritorious. I think I went to high school with her, meritorious. Asked her to the prom. Yeah, she said no. All right, now this is me. I'm taking this material from an upcoming book that you're going to enjoy very much called Death of the Old Humanity. So I want you to note the first requirement of a good sinner's prayer, really good stiff sinner's prayer, starts with, quote, a conviction of the presence of sin. Does this clash with anything I told you yesterday about the type of teaching given over to the Romans? What was the type of teaching given over to the Romans by Paul? It's this. Who needs a conviction of the presence of sin? I mean, this is my question to you. I mean, isn't it obvious that we missed the mark? I mean, why do people have to tell us that we're sinners? We know that. It's just, we know that we can't do anything perfectly. We can't do everything that we want. It should be obvious. Now, it is true that Paul convicts the entire human race at the beginning of Romans, but this is only from, you know, chapter 1, verse 8 through Romans 3:20. From Romans 3:21, as I've told you before, to the end of chapter 8, it's all about what Christ did to solve the problem of sin. And this is what is missing. To solve the problem of sin, God sent Jesus Christ. Let me just review this quickly for you because I think it's important. Romans chapter 1, verse 8 through Romans 3:20, Paul is presenting the impossibility of self-salvation. He first takes on the world, the world at large, and he says, you know, knowing God, not as God do they thank or glorify him. They see him in the creation, in his works of heaven, but they still, you know, don't want anything to do with them. And while Paul's teaching this in the first, you know, verses of Romans 1, the Jews are probably sitting there going, yeah, stupid idiot world. And then Paul says, you who are denominating yourself a Jew, you think you're all righteous. You think you're pure. You tell other people not to steal, not to, but what do you do? You know, they are hypocrites. And so Paul is nailing everybody to the wall in Romans 1, verse 8 through Romans 3:20. And he gets to the crescendo of the impossibility is Romans 3:10-11. There's thus, he says, after condemning the whole world, and then including the Jews, he says, the result of this is there's no one righteous, no, not one. Not one is seeking out God. All avoid him. All were made useless. And then, so everybody's screwed. If you read Romans chapter 1 and 2, and the first part of 3, if you stop there, the purpose of that is to shut every mouth, to bar every mouth. Because before Paul can begin the symphony of what Christ has accomplished, he has to shut everybody up. Otherwise, everybody's jabbering. You ever been to one of those symphonies where everybody's like, they're mumbling in the audience, and then the conductor taps the baton, you know, and then everybody shuts up. It's just dead silence before the symphony starts. Romans 1:8 through 3:20 is Paul shutting everyone up. 3:21 is where the gospel starts. Yet now, apart from law, a righteousness of God is manifest. Paul just showed you how no human being could be righteous. It's impossible. It's impossible for people who have never heard of the scriptures. It's impossible for the people who wrote the scriptures. But now, apart from law, a righteousness of God is manifest, yet a righteousness of God through Jesus Christ's faith. The yet now of Romans 3:21 is the death, the entombment, and the resurrection of Christ. So in the Christian world, however, when they want to bring you the sinner's prayer, when they want to announce to you a way of salvation, they go through the impossibility of it, and then they stop at Romans 3:20, and then instead of telling you what Christ did, they close the book and they say, now you say the sinner's prayer. Now you feel convicted. Now you repent. Now you have a good attitude. You do this, you do that. You start going to church, you behave yourself. They don't get to what Christ did. They take us through the bad section. This is the Christian religion. They take us through the bad section of Romans, and they leave you there. They leave you there. Everyone is still stuck at Romans 3:20. Instead of playing the rest of the tune, Romans 3:20 through the end of Romans 8, they take the needle off the record and they say, okay, that's enough. Now you have to take it from here. They never get to, yet now, apart from law, righteousness of God is manifest, yet a righteousness of God through Jesus Christ's faith, because the emphasis is on your faith. They take the needle off the record after the bad part, and they don't want to tell you that it's done with the righteousness of God through Jesus Christ's faith, because like I told you yesterday, they want a struggle. They want a production. They want to distinguish themselves above others. They want others to go to hell so that they can feel good about going to heaven because they did. They said the sinner's prayer better than anyone else. So modern so-called evangelicals, they act as though the rest of Romans doesn't exist. This is like telling the families of the victims of a plane crash, well, you know, we're sorry to tell you that the flight of your loved ones has crashed into the ocean. Oh my God, they're crying and they're weeping. And then waiting 3 days to tell them, oh, sorry, we should have mentioned that everyone was rescued. Sorry. Same thing. Christianity throws at you, you're a sinner bound for hell, even though the solution to that problem happened 2,000 years before. I mean, really, technically, you don't even have to read Romans 1:8 through 3:20. You can just start with the solution, because as I said, we already know we're convicted. But, ooh, Christianity loves the convicted part. They love the you're a sinner bound for hell part. They love to scare the hell out of you, or the hell into you, I should say. And instead of the faith of Christ being put on display and say, you don't have to do anything, that man did it. The sinner's prayer, confession, weeping, guilt, anguish, never being sure if you did the right thing, said the right words, were in the right mood, the right frame of mind. So yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, your loved one's plane crashed into the ocean. And then 3 days later, oh, should have told you, everyone was rescued. In the world of sin, we already have the rescue. Let's tell people what was accomplished. But no, time somehow stops after Romans 3:20. So that in the standard Christian gospel presentation, there is no historical remedy, which is weird. They name Christ, but it's he's not actually the remedy. He's the possibility. He's not the remedy as they present him. He makes salvation possible. What do you have to do? I just listed a lot of the stuff, starting with the sinner's prayer. So this freedom from sin I was telling you about yesterday, it inexplicably now comes down to a modern act, not an ancient one, by Christ. This freedom from sin comes down to a modern act of a modern person who better be quick about it. We're all still in the lurch. In spite of the cross, we're all still sinners doomed to hell. So what happened to the rest of Romans where the solution is laid out? Paul laid out the solution meticulously via the Spirit of God 2,000 years ago. Forget that. No. The news of the rescue, in this case, the news of the rescue from Romans 1:8 through 3:20, the news of what was done 2,000 years ago, it's not withheld for 3 days, like in the airplane crash in the ocean example. It's withheld for 2,000 years. They're still not saying what the solution was because it puts them out of the picture. It puts their efforts on your behalf to bring you to Christ and to present you to Christ through their machinations, through their services, their confessionals in the Catholic faith, quote unquote, or the Pentecostals. You must speak in tongues or you're not saved. So the news of the rescue is withheld for 2,000 years. So to modern evangelicals, I hate to even call them that, the answer to sin's bondage is not to teach the solution. This is the crazy part. I mean, I'm all into teaching the solution. You just sit down, you relax, you get a bowl of popcorn, and I'm going to tell you the solution. I'm going to tell you what was already done. So their modus operandi is not to teach you the solution, but to bog you down in the problem. Christians are bogged down still. Every day of their sorry lives, they're bogged down in the problem. It's still a problem. This is what blows my mind. Sin is still a problem. Why is that guy going to hell? Well, he's a sinner. Why is sin still a problem? Ask somebody that. Why are we even talking about the potential of people being going to hell for their sin when Jesus Christ died for the sin of the world? But no, you're a sinner bound for hell. That's the standard opening salvo of the Christian so-called gospel. So I know why they do this. They decide not to teach concerning Christ's accomplishment. That is, you know, the solution, what I told you yesterday was Paul's type of teaching. Instead, they challenge hopefuls. People come, they're hopeful. Why do people go to church? They're hopeful that they can find the way to salvation. So instead of presenting the solution, which is Paul's gospel, they challenge hopefuls to kneel at a man-made altar, to pray a prayer of their own invention, and you better say it from the bottom of your heart with all your sincerity. You better muster it up, because if you don't, then you're going to die without having done anything about your sin. Do you want to die without having done anything about your sin? Do you want to die without having made that confession and said that prayer? Without me having done anything for sin? As the psalmist says, salvation from a human is futile. These people didn't get that memo. Pay no attention to anything after Romans 3:20, because you, the sinner, have not yet personally jumped the chasm between Romans 3:20 and Romans 3:21. And here's their official announcement from the pews, from the pulpit, wherever BS is sold.
We will not be resuming the book of Romans until you have done something worthy and admirable against these universal problems of sin and death.
Can you believe that? That's what they tell people. They even tell kids that in summer Bible games. I like summer. We're in summer now. The only thing I don't like about it is that I know somewhere right now some kid is in summer Bible camp, being told that he must do something worthy and admirable against the universal problems of sin and death. We saw what it took on the cross, as I told you yesterday. My dad, he's dead. I love my dad. He's a great man, beautiful man. He was spoiled on God early in his life. You know why? Because of these goddamn Bible camps, summer Bible camps. They handed him a cookie and told him to do the Ten Commandments. They handed him a cookie and told him to do something worthy and admirable to undo the dual doom of sin and death. At age 10, 11, 12, whatever it was, my dad was smart enough to know, I can't do that. Can I have another cookie so I can go home and resume my life of sin, you know? And my dad started smoking. My dad was a good kid, but, you know, he starts smoking at the age of, whatever, 16, 17. It's just this rebellion. Because you're convinced as a kid that that's God. God expects you to come up with a solution of sin and death. When all they have to do is sit the kids down and tell them what Jesus Christ did. But no, they never get to Romans 3:21 because it takes all the fun away from them. It takes all the summer Bible camps away. I could end a summer freaking Bible camp in 5 minutes. Sit down, kids. Jesus Christ took care of your sin at the cross. You never have to worry about it again. Now go in peace. Here's a cookie. Get the hell out of here. We don't want to see you again. Oh, here's a website, martincenter.com. Yeah. That's what I would do. Summer Bible camp lasts maybe 15 minutes in the Zender world. Be the Zender Bible camp. I would start at Romans 3:21. Yet now, apart from law, there is no law that applies to you. A righteousness of God has happened, but of Jesus Christ's faith. Oh, yeah, because your faith, boys and girls, let's see, well, I was going to say your faith sucks, but that wouldn't be a good thing to say to boys and girls. I would say your faith, what would I say? Your faith is a broken toy. You wind up your faith and it don't go. You turn the switch on your little faith car and it doesn't move because your battery's dead. You got nothing in you. Jesus Christ had a lot in him. He took on all your failures, all your problems, and he died on the cross, and now you're free. You're free. What do you think about that? Oh, we're going to believe that. Yeah, good. Now, take the cookie and get the hell out of here. That'd be my Bible camp. But no. We will not be resuming the book of Romans until you have done something worthy and admirable against these universal problems of sin and death. And dear Mrs. Hooperdingle will now be playing some inspiring organ music to help you with your decision. Oh, it makes me want to go to the altar. It moves me. It's moving. Back to Wikipedia. Some affirm that the sinner's prayer evolved in some form or another in the early days of the Protestant Reformation movement, as I said earlier, as a reaction against the Roman Catholic dogma of justification by means of meritorious works. I made fun of that, and I think I made fun of it well, but I'm going to make fun of it again at the end of this show in case I didn't make enough fun of it. What a joke. The Protestants. Get a load of this. The Protestants, rebelling against the Roman Catholic dogma of justification by means of meritorious works, invented a different meritorious work, the sinner's prayer. Wow, that illustrates the great progress in the last 2,000 years of the Christian religion.